I also think that maybe it's a good idea. There's a good reason that this retreat isn't just this one day and this one night, because I think maybe nobody would come. We're all so tired from rushing around to get things done in order to get here, to take care of whatever we need to take care of for the next 5 days so that we can be here and not have to do. And add to that piece, Passover and preparing for Seder or traveling to be with family, or just plain being with family. The anxiety level just seems to grow the first day on retreat. It really takes a while to feel comfortable in a new environment, to adjust to the unfamiliar, to the schedule, to the sleeping arrangements, perhaps to the food, giving up our personal comforts, being in a place with 70 or 80 people. It's really giving up what we're used to. Last night, I felt like I was living in a barn. I was sleeping in a barn. I could hear the cows and the sheep, and I could smell the manure. It was a challenge for me. Though it even may take a while to get to feel comfortable with how the mind is being in the beginning, to see how full of busyness it is, or how full of emotion, or tiredness, or dullness, or restlessness, or wishing to be someplace else, any place but here. The first day can be full of tiredness and struggle. It's very demanding on the body at first, all this sitting for a whole day. The knees, the back, they really rebel. And the mind rebels. There's so many instructions. There's so much silence. There's so many sittings, no talking. It's really easy to forget what brought us here. What was the wisdom that brought us here that may not be showing right here in the face of all the discomfort, in the face of all the dissatisfaction? What were the reasons to come and spend a serious amount of time just being with this mind, with this body? The larger question, why meditate? I think it's a good question to reflect on, even for those of us who have been meditating for a long time, to see if whatever the original reason was is still true for us. Is it true right here, right now? Or is it just what we've heard from others? Or is it what we've read? Perhaps there's no answer to that question. Perhaps right now there's just a not knowing. And maybe that's why we come on retreat, or part of why we come on the retreat, whether it's for the first time, or the 10th time, or the 20th time, to ask, to inquire into, to open to. Lots of questions come to mind. Lots of answers come to mind. And sometimes the answers come more easily than the questions, or more easily than just being with not knowing. Perhaps we meditate because we want to become more of something, more calm, more peaceful, more joyful, more compassionate, more wise. Or maybe it's in order to understand ourselves and to understand others, to hopefully encourage understanding in place of all the struggle and all the confusion, to get clarity about something in our life or about life in general. Or maybe we come to meditate to facilitate some change in the way we are, some letting go, to become less angry or less stressed or less dependent. Maybe we'd like to get rid of some habit or grow some courage to let go of something in our lives that doesn't feel supportive. Maybe you've done a retreat in the past and it's been fulfilling for you. And so you come in order to get more of that. Maybe we're here trying to attain enlightenment or liberation, to be free from struggle, to be free from suffering, to end the cycle of action and reaction in our lives. There are many reasons, I'm sure, why we're here. Some of them are lofty, some of them are very grand, and some of them are very simple. And when we look into this a little bit more closely, about why we're here and why we meditate, it seems the motivation can be a lot about getting, about achieving, about becoming, about attaining or changing, letting go of, getting rid of. Sound familiar? Basically, it's wanting things to be different. And isn't this similar to how we might be feeling just about being here? Wanting things to be different from how they are. Wishing I had brought something else to wear. Wanting my mind to be quiet during the sitting so I can focus awareness on the breath instead of on the many stories. Wanting the person next to me to be quiet. Wanting to get rid of the aches and pains. Wanting a different roommate. This wanting things to be different, or wanting me to be different, or wanting somebody else to be different, doesn't this suggest, or doesn't this indicate that we're just not happy with how things are in this moment? How I am, or how others are, right here, right now. I want this to be different. And this ongoing trying to get something, or trying to get rid of something on retreat, this wanting to get something different, to be different, to change the outer, or to change the inner, get rid of what I don't like. Doesn't this really mirror the way we live our lives? Trying to get so many things, chasing after what we think will make us happy, make us feel good, whether it's a good relationship or a good job, whether it's all the things that we buy, hoping they'll change our life and make us happier and make life more simple. Trying to get the so-called security that a good job and a good income we think will provide. This is the same as trying to attain states of mind we call pleasant or we call peaceful. Or we try to get rid of the things that we think stand in the way of our happiness, that stand in the way of our getting what we want, like the job we don't like or the partner we don't like. So yes, meditation is about being free from suffering. It's about lasting happiness. And it's about liberation. The Buddha said the one fortunate attachment is liberation. But maybe the method of seeking happiness and peacefulness and freedom by trying to change things, by trying to get something, by trying to change ourselves, isn't really working in our lives. Or why else would we be here? This wanting to get or to get rid of. You know, once we get what we want or what we think we want, how long does it last? Whether it's something in everyday life, just, you know, a beautiful day full of sunshine, full of harmony. Or maybe it's an ice cream sundae with a cherry and whipped cream on top. Or maybe it's a sitting, a beautiful sitting where we just, you know, have that feeling of ease and well-being and we can be steady with the breath. No problem, no problem. Does the satisfaction, does the pleasure, does this really last? Look for a minute at relationships. You know, we fall in love. There's that first blush of love, that feeling of connection. And think about what that feels like. You know, the body feels different, and it colors everything around us. The whole world looks rosy. You know, we go to our work, nothing's a problem. We come home, nothing's a problem. We see everything with love eyes. It's great. And then, and then, the warts start to show. You notice, oh, this guy doesn't clean up after himself. You know? Oh, it goes on and on and on. And all of a sudden, the seeing happens. The satisfaction doesn't last. That feeling of pleasure doesn't last. What about meditation? We have that wonderful sitting. I don't even have to ask you, does it last? I know, and you know, it doesn't. Whether it's 10 minutes, or whether it's a whole sitting, or whether it's a whole lovely day, it just doesn't last. So there can be quiet mind and peacefulness, but the mind storms or the body storms are bound to come. And sometimes they just last until they just spin out, until the bell ends the sitting. So we can keep trying to chase after the pleasant, hoping it will last, but the pleasant always changes or goes. And it can be really discouraging at times to acknowledge this, to experience this. But it's a vital understanding of how things are, of how life is. It's impermanent. It's changing. And this is what the Buddha referred to as anicca, impermanence. And this means whatever arises will pass away. Whatever comes into existence will die, will come to an end, will pass away. And this is one of the characteristics of all things. It's true of emotions. It's true of mind states. It's true of thoughts. It's true of this body. It's true of the breath. Whatever is born dies. Now, the good news is that the unpleasant also is impermanent. That pain will ultimately change and pass away. The overwhelming anger will ultimately change and pass away, as will the grief or the judging mind or just the constant thoughts, the frustration. All of this will pass away. The Buddha, in his wisdom, said, lose the fascination with things that come and go. Let go of the interest in these things, in the mind states, in the body sensations. He knew that trying to hang on to, or trying to get what we desire, what we think of as pleasant, just leads to disappointment and frustration. And also the reverse, by trying to get what we want, by trying to hang on to something. So what's the implication of this? How does this apply to us being here on retreat? We sit here. We use the breath as the object of our attention during the sitting meditation. It's an object that's always with us. It's an integral part of our existence. The awareness of the breath is an opportunity to intimately experience impermanence. And without me having to do anything, I don't have to make any effort to breathe. All by itself. It's not really all by itself. There are lots of conditions that make it happen. But without me doing anything, it just comes into existence and passes out of existence. And meditation invites this into awareness, into knowing. Not as a theory, not as something to think about, but as actual experience with each in-breath, with each out-breath. It's really a chance to see and experience and deeply know impermanence as a fact of life. So if we sit down on our cushion or our bench or our chair, wanting the meditation to be a certain way, wanting the breath or the mind to be a certain way, or wanting to stay the way we want it, how is this possible? How can this happen? If it and all things are impermanent, changing. If we hold on to an idea of what my meditation should be, And I'm sure for each of us it's different. For some of us it may be three consecutive breaths being aware of that. For some of us, maybe we want a whole 45-minute period of awareness of the breath. No thinking, no thoughts. For some of us might want the whole retreat. If I take up an idea of how me, the meditator, should be calm, peaceful, wise, is this really contributing to lasting happiness, to understanding, having these ideas? How can this contribute to freedom? The Buddha taught awakening. Having an idea of how anything should be in any moment, isn't this really ignoring the truth of whatever is in that moment? I find it really interesting that the words ignoring and ignorance have the same root. This practice is about awakening to life as it is right now, being receptive to each moment, even when the moment holds pain or discomfort or dissatisfaction in mind or body. The practice is to wake up, to bring careful and gentle attention, no forcing, no whips, just easy, gentle, relaxing attention to what is. In a way, it sounds so easy. And it's to do this with the intention, and this is really important, the intention for understanding the nature of self, of others, and of all life. So during meditation, if the intention is just always to be peaceful and calm, we're really in trouble because it'll be dependent on something outside of me. It may be dependent on being in a peaceful and quiet meditation hall. It may be dependent on doing something in particular, like just being only with the breath. Or it may be dependent on having something in particular, like maybe a comfortable zafu. So if the intention is to be happy, and the happiness is dependent on something that inevitably will change or come to an end, like a certain feeling, then it can't be more than temporarily satisfying, temporarily pleasing. And since nothing impermanent can be held on to, we can see and experience in the days here together that it's the grasping onto, the taking up, and the rejecting that causes the struggle. This struggle, this is dukkha in the language of the Buddha. And this means dissatisfactoriness. And I think this first day of retreat is a beautiful example of how change causes dukkha, how change causes dissatisfaction. Whether it's in relation to the food, or the bed I'm sleeping on, or my roommate, or how the sitting is. Just seeing the insecurity of the unfamiliar, seeing the insecurity of the unknown. So whatever we grasp or try to hold on to or reject, this is important. It's not inherently good or bad in itself. But notice while we're here, it's the clinging to, it's the holding on to that causes the suffering. And then notice how that contributes to judging and to criticizing about even what's going on, about that piece, about judging myself or criticizing others. And a story and a reaction starts, and it just spins out, and it adds one layer on another layer on another layer. So if you're feeling this kind of struggle or dissatisfaction, and please know that this is so common, especially on the first day of retreat, I encourage you to look into where there's a holding on to something, whether it's thoughts of how things should be on the retreat or thoughts of how I should be during a sitting or here on retreat. So this practice of awareness, looking into, inquiring into, helping us understand, the emphasis is placed on understanding. It's the understanding that liberates. The actual practice that we do is called samatha vipassana. Now, samatha means calmness, and vipassana means understanding or insight. And these two aspects of the meditation, each one is important, and they're interdependent. They arise together, each being somewhat a condition for the other. So the calmness, it's like it's the ground, it's the seed for the understanding to grow in. It's the ground for the seed of understanding to grow in. When there's the calmness, the understanding can arise. And when the understanding arises, so often there's the calmness. They arise together. An example of this, you know, when you're very engaged in some activity, I know for me, gardening is something I love to do. So it's a beautiful day out. I go out into my garden and I'm really involved with preparing the soil and choosing what I want to plant and marking out the rows and planting the seeds. And the time goes by and there is no awareness that I'm doing anything. There's the interest, there's the involvement, and the calmness is just there, without effort, without my doing. It's like no doer and no doing. It just happens. Hours go by. So here we sit, quietly allowing the body and the mind just to be. And this fact of not doing allows the space to experience just what is, and to know we're experiencing whatever is happening. So it may be knowing and experience that breathing is happening. It may be knowing that thinking is happening. It may be knowing that body sensations are happening. Or it may be knowing that there's a reaction to the thinking or a reaction to the pain. What is being asked for is to be present and receptive to what is, however it is in this moment. The breath, the thought, the body sensation. So during the practice here, during the meditation, we sit, and we allow mindfulness. We allow the awareness to rest with the experience of breathing. Awareness of in-breath, awareness of the out-breath, awareness of the in-breath. So then maybe attention goes to something else. Maybe it goes to the argument I had before I came here. Maybe it goes to the pain in my knee. At the very moment I realize the attention is now with the thought or the emotion or the sensation or the sound, whatever it is, acknowledge that that is where the attention is. And then gently allow the experience of that. Gently. No need to judge it. No need to feed the story about it. And then gently bring the attention back to the breath. The moment of knowing the attention is not with the breath is a moment of awareness. Can we bring an eagerness and an interest to meet with each new experience? The experience of each moment. And I don't mean an intellectual interest and investigation. It's not thinking about it. But it's an interest that creates the space that creates the space for and allows, that opens with alertness, that allows this experience to be whatever it is, that allows it to be the fullness of life just happening, that isn't limited by our ideas about it. So instead of seeing something as a problem, as something that we have to do something about, that we have to figure out, oh, how am I going to get rid of this? How am I going to solve this? Instead, can we see it as something not to do, as something just to allow, something to meet, something to accept? I know this is different, but it's like, can we just take a break? Can we gently relax into it, into the present, even if it's a pain, even if it's an uncomfortable mind state? It's really an occasion to rejoice that in this moment there's awareness. And then just notice what happens if you just notice and don't act on it. Don't give it importance. Don't follow that thought. Don't dwell on the pain. And then just come back to the bare experience of what's happening in the present moment. And it's also, each moment, an opportunity to rejoice that things change. So another insight or understanding that awareness reveals and offers us is called anatta in the language of the Buddha. So let's go back to the garden for a minute to explain anatta. So if I'm out there in the garden and the sun is shining and the birds are singing and it's warm and I'm planting my seeds and my stomach is full, there are no distractions, a feeling of pleasantness, I would probably say I'm having a good time. This is a pleasant experience. Now compare that to a different situation. I'm out in the garden and the storm clouds roll in and it starts to rain. And all of a sudden the phone starts ringing and my neighbor's dog starts barking and maybe comes over and starts digging up the seeds. This I would call an unpleasant experience. Frustration arises. I'd probably run in and go inside and just give up the whole experience. This is an example of anatta, dependent arising. The way that I am feeling, the feeling that arises, the thoughts that arise, the reaction that comes, arises with whatever else is happening, is dependent on whatever else is happening. So even though the action is the same, I'm planting in my garden, it's going to be a different experience each time because everything else around it is different. To explain further, the perception of anything, the reaction to anything, the existence of anything, depends on conditions, whether it's seen or unseen, whether these factors are seen or unseen. So can we see and understand that what is painful this minute and also what is pleasant this minute is due to conditions? It's due to what else is happening. And as the what else changes, so will the experience. So when strong emotions arise during a sitting, or dullness, or frustration, or restlessness, or the wanting mind, it's an opportunity also to see into what may be the conditions that have contributed to their arising. You know, think about it for a minute. It's the first day on retreat. What was life for you like before you got here? Are you exhausted and dull from overwork, from too many commitments? Is it a time for you of emotional stress, or is it a time of many changes in your life? Are you looking into the possibility of change? These factors aren't separate from us. The environment, the emotions, and the mind and the body, they all affect each other. We say they're interdependent. They're dependent on conditions. They're dependent on each other. So it's understandable with our hectic and demanding lives that we come here and we sit down and we're quiet and we're still. We stop talking. We stop doing. In the silence here, in the stillness, stuff arises. And sitting here on the cushion, we notice it. We notice the tiredness and the emotions and the mind states and the restlessness. The important thing is to see it as just what's happening and to meet them and to meet yourself with gentleness and with acceptance. So this process of just sitting still and cultivating awareness, what we call meditation, it's to see and to know that things change. It's to see and to know the process of mind that desires the pleasant and that pushes away the unpleasant. It's to see that things depend on other things. We sit here, we sit down on our cushion, not to inflict self-torture, not to beat our body and our mind into submission. It's not to do anything. It's not to become anything. But we do this in wisdom. We do this in order to allow, just allow understanding to arise in its own time, in its own way. When we hold on tightly and tense up with physical pain or with a mind state like anger or fear, have you noticed that the holding just perpetuates it? It just makes it last longer. Holding on to something keeps it very rigidly in place. If I pick this up and I hold on to it, how can it move? How can letting go happen? If my hand relaxes, the letting go happens. I didn't do anything. I just relaxed. And the letting go happens. So it is also with relaxing into what is. A relaxing of the mind state is possible. The pain or the emotion has the space to move. It has the space to ease. It's as if a knot has been tightly tied and just is loosened. The next time you notice, you're sitting here and you notice an unpleasant sensation or an emotion or a thought, just experiment with it. Just see if gently meeting with the experience rather than clenching around it in fear or anger, or just bringing an attitude of, what's going on here? Just not needing an answer to that, but just resting in that question of being alert, of being interested in it. Just see if that brings some spaciousness to it. And then see what happens in the spaciousness. So in answer to the original question that I posed at the beginning of why meditate, some of us, the answer might have been, I don't know. I think that's an honest response, and it's one worthy of consideration. I think not knowing can be a wonderful way to approach meditation, to approach life, to approach each moment. And not knowing that just relaxes into the present moment with that interest and that alertness, yet not needing to have a specific answer. This is receptivity. So can we open to what is? Can we allow whatever is presenting in this moment just to have its life and to pass away, just like the breath, without trying to hold on to it, without trying to push it away, nothing to change, nothing to adjust, nothing to manipulate, nothing to make better, nothing to lose, nothing to become, nothing to achieve or attain, nothing to succeed or to fail. Just to open to what is in the moment. The idea is not to not have preferences, to prefer ease and well-being over struggle. That's understandable. We all have preferences. They arise. The problem can be if we act on them without realizing the impact on ourselves or on others, or if we believe that our preferences will bring us lasting happiness or liberation or peace, or if we feel that our preferences, that we need our preferences to make us happy. The problem is if we become slaves to the preferences. The practice is about liberation. So what's being asked for is to have the intention to be mindful. And just look at that word for a minute. Mindful. To allow our consciousness to be full of the moment. Whether the consciousness meets with the breath, or with thinking, or with sound, or whatever. Just to be mindful. To be mindful of whatever arises. With this mindfulness, with bare attention, without the judging, without the reaction, there's a meeting with the actual experience of the nature of things, impermanent, ever-changing, dependent on conditions. What a wonderful reminder when the waves of life seem to overwhelm us, that like the breath, they come and they go. Gently returning to the breath during meditation can be like an anchor in these stormy seas. And I really have to say that this is not just for beginning meditators. You know, who among us is exempt from frustration, from dissatisfaction, from struggle? Especially the kind of struggle that unexpected and unasked for change brings. You know, many times in the last 2 years of living without a home base, you know, lugging around my home in a suitcase, sleeping in more beds than I could count. The cushion, the breath, has been a refuge, the sanctuary, a reminder that just like the breath, whatever might be arising in life, whatever is presenting in life, in this moment or the bigger moment, this too will pass away. The beauty of a daily practice is that we take time out of our usual busyness and we slow down. We meditate silently with stillness and receptivity. Just letting the busyness of the mind recede from importance. Letting the resistance and the restlessness slowly recede from importance. It's not getting rid of. It's not pushing it away. It's just inviting awareness of just this. Of just this. And just this. Just being open to the truth of this moment. Can we relax into sitting? Can we relax into breathing happening? When there's letting go of trying to make the moment something other than it is right now in this moment, when there's letting go of trying to become something or someone in particular, when there's a letting go of the obsessing over a problem, of trying to figure out a solution, we invite the possibility of something more than our limited view of things to be seen and to happen. There's an opportunity to embrace the wholeness and the wonder of life as it just unfolds in each moment. This is freedom. This is freedom unlimited and unconditioned. So can we just sit together quietly for a few minutes?